It's a draining job. If you don't live, breathe, and eat politics and in a way that you actually are obsessed with it to the point where you're willing to sacrifice personal relationships and things like that, you're not going to have a good time and you're not going to be able to do it.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Under Oath, a podcast brought to you and hosted by the organization Women Pursuing Law. I'm Hani Siddiqui, WPL's president.
And I'm Zara Kabir, WPL's vice president. Under Oath will aim to shed light on different career paths within law, give you the chance to hear from noted speakers, and show the industry from the POV of a woman.
Under Oath will also serve as a platform dedicated to empowering women and non-binary conforming individuals in the law industry. So if that aligns with your ideas, be sure to subscribe to our podcast.
On that note, be sure to follow us on our Instagram at UTDWPL and our LinkedIn at UTD Women Pursuing Law. And without further ado, let's get right into this episode.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Under Oath. I'm Kavya, and I'll be your host for today. For today's episode, I'm joined by Gavin Nicholson, our first male speaker on the podcast, who is currently the legislative director at the Texas House of Representatives for Representative Carl Sherman, as well as a current law student at the University of North Texas at Dallas. Gavin, would you like to briefly tell us about yourself?
Yeah, so I mean, kind of like you said, I am the currently legislative director for Representative Carl Sherman, and I currently am a law student at the University of North Texas Dallas School of Law. Brand new college, so you know it's a nice place and lots of really cool professors. And I guess other than that, the only other thing I would say is that I also sit on the McKinney Housing Authority and I wear many hats is my thing. So I got a lot going on.
And we are definitely going to get into all those hats that you put on. But to start, I do want to thank you for taking the time out of your day to talk to us. I want to begin by asking you about kind of your journey from undergrad to law school and maybe even before undergrad. How did you get to where you are now? And how did you figure out that law was your passion and politics was kind of the realm you wanted to go into?
So for me, really what I guess the deciding factor and kind of the point I knew that I wanted to do politics was it was almost like an obsession for me. It wasn't like something where I woke up and I was like, oh, it'd be nice to get active in the community. It was more of a kind of everything just kind of consumed me. You know, I was basically reading news all the time when I didn't need to. I was always trying to find ways to bring up politics and with my friend groups when, you know, I shouldn't have. And I was annoying people. You know, I mean, it's kind of that's kind of when I knew what I was destined to do something in politics. But I actually didn't know. I was going to go to law school probably until my second or my third year in college. I actually started out as a nursing major in college and then went from a nursing major to cybersecurity. And then from cybersecurity, I went to political science. And then once I went to political science, I kind of was like, hey, I'm good at this and I like it. And I actually read my books. So, you know, that's kind of how I knew it was right for me. But I'll tell you, even then, you know, even being in law school, it's kind of like once you get there, it's completely different than what you expect it to actually be like. So it's nothing really prepares you, I guess I should say.
So I do want to ask, why did you begin with nursing? Was there a reason that you wanted to go? If politics, like you said, it was all consuming, why the nursing shift?
Well, I knew I wanted to help people. And I thought I was too stupid to be a doctor. So I was like, you know, the next best thing is nursing. And so maybe go to a nurse practitioner or something like that. I was not too stupid to be a doctor. I just realized I didn't like studying. So, you know, it kind of was, it was kind of that moment where I actually did an internship where I went to Poland for a little bit. And then that's a whole separate kind of thing. But I came back and I was like, this sucks. I don't like it. So, and it has nothing to do with, you know, the actual profession. I didn't think I would enjoy it long term. And I sat and I reflected and thought, you know, would I actually be happy coming home every single day like this? And You know, is this something I actually can see myself doing? And the answer was no. So I shifted to cybersecurity, and I took, I think, a full year of just cybersecurity courses, and I hated it, and it was not an enjoyable experience. And, you know, I finally landed on political science, and I knew that it was the right thing for me because it was the first time in my college career that I had gotten all A's in a semester. I was like, this is a nice feeling.
It clicked in that moment.
And then I kind of was looking into some of the other specializations. So like I have a political science degree, but I also have a certificate in peace studies. So, you know, it's one of those things where it kind of, everything made sense. Everything kind of meshed together well. And it felt natural. It didn't feel like I was forcing myself into something.
Right. I think that's a very interesting like switch from nursing to cybersecurity to political science, but I think it worked out. It worked out well.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, and, you know, there's nothing like, there's not a mandatory major you have to be like do an undergrad, you know. You know, even in my current like law class, there's folks that have like business degrees. There's folks that have English degrees. There's somebody actually does have a doctorate already. They're an ER surgeon, and they decided to go to law school pretty late in their life. But, you know, it was one of those things where they said they hated being a doctor, and so now they want to be a lawyer. So thankfully, I didn't get that far before I made the switch. But
yeah, so moving on from undergrad, you, again, like we mentioned at the very beginning, have had quite a bit of experience in politics. So for our students who kind of want to follow in those footsteps of yours and maybe work for the Texas House of Representatives or just in politics in general, what was that process like for you to get to where you are now?
Well, I'll say the first thing is that you should ask yourself why you want to go there to begin with. I think that's the main thing. I think a lot of people think it's something that it isn't. In reality, when you get to the Texas House of Representatives, you kind of realize that the mysticism about it disappears, and that there's not a whole lot of work that actually gets done from a lot of representatives. I say that not to discourage somebody, but the reality is that chances are you're going to get there and you're going to be a sitting duck. I would say maybe 20 to 30 members out of the 150 that we have actually decide what legislation is going to be passed. And it's unfortunate, but that's the reality. And I would say the journey that I took, you know, it's not one where, you know, you can really plan it. It's more about who you know than anything. And what I mean by that is I got selected as an intern initially, even though I was a campaign manager. I had all this other experience under my belt. I still was only able to come in as an intern because I didn't know anybody. But once I got in and got my foot in the door, I kind of quickly moved up to being a legislative aide, to being a deputy legislative director, to now a legislative director, all within a year. So like once you get in, it's actually really quick to move up. But I will say that there's a kind of a caveat to that, because the reason you move up so quick is because it's a draining job. If you don't live, breathe, and eat politics and in a way that you actually are obsessed with it to the point where you're willing to sacrifice personal relationships and things like that, you're not going to have a good time, and you're not going to be able to do it. You know, I have stories where, you know, when we're on budget night, I literally got to the Capitol at 8 a.m. and I was there until 4 a.m. the next morning. And then we had to get up at 8 again to continue things, you know. So it's not going to be a traditional, you know, oh, I've been working 8 hours. You know, there's some days where you need to be prepared to work sometimes 72 hours straight and not complain about it. And, you know, I will say I had a great support system, even when before I got there. I had friends that worked in the legislature, and they introduced me to other folks, and I built up my support network like that. But, you know, if you're going into politics, whether it be the campaign side, whether it be, you know, working for a representative or an elected official, you have to do it because you love it. You can't do it for the pay, because we don't get paid that much. you can't do it because you want power, because those people see through it very, very quickly. They don't last very long, and they typically get thrown out pretty quick. You have to love it is the thing. So I would say that was kind of my journey. I kind of lived, breathed it and sacrificed some of my personal relationships to get there. I spent 6 months in Austin, basically living on a buddy's couch, just to kind of get my foot in the door, just because that was what I had to do. You know, some people are a little bit more fortunate and mm-hmm. They can afford to stay at a hotel or something nice, but I didn't have that luxury. So
I think you mentioned it, that the idea of politics is like, you're going to go get stuff done and all of this stuff. And it's like movie representation, but you said like, you're a sitting duck basically. So how did you keep yourself from not being discouraged? Like if you weren't getting the stuff done that you were wanting to get done and you were kind of just having to wait.
So I think the main thing is compromise in the sense that not in the way that we typically talk about it, where you know, the reality is I work for a Democrat and a Republican trifecta government. You know, they don't need to do anything for us. You know, if they actually work with us, it hurts them. So what I mean by compromise is, you know, my boss and I, we were tasked with a lot of criminal justice reform bills. So we started out with our kind of our flagship bill, Bose Law, named after Botham Jean, who was shot by, you know, a Dallas police officer. It started out as this really big encompassing bill where we redefined what the Castle Doctrine was to kind of strengthen the Castle Doctrine a bit. We tackled affirmative defenses for police officers. We added a lot of criminal penalties for police officers. By the end of the session, that bill literally turned into a body camera bill that just stated that police officers need to have if they're wearing a body cam, they need to strictly adhere to their department policy, with no criminal charges or anything like that. So, you know, the reason we even got there, though, is because we were willing to compromise. And, you know, I will say that the compromise, too, I have some friends that work in the Texas House that don't have Republican friends. They typically don't get anything passed. I made a couple Republican friends and we got a couple bills passed because the reality is that a lot of those members or the representatives and the senators, they don't read the legislation. They don't have time to. We filed something like 8,000 bills. You know, so the staffers, though, read those bills and the attention gets brought to those bills by their friends or by lobbyists or by things like that. So, you know, staffers talk, I think, is kind of the main thing. So by making those friends, I was able to say, hey, I know your boss wants to get a bill heard on one of the committees that my boss sits on. So, you know, if you do this for me, you know, maybe I can convince my boss. And it's a lot of give and take. So I would say it's really what you make of it. Like there are some people that get there just to fill a spot and they're content with that. And that's fine. You know, I mean, not everybody can be the big superstar or the mover and shaker or the person that gets stuff done. Sometimes you just need a backbencher person that you know is going to be a consistent vote or a consistent staffer. So, I mean, that's kind of really what it was like. I mean, for me, I'm the kind of person that's very ambitious. I'm kind of always moving. So like, even if my boss wasn't doing something and we weren't doing something, I would still try to help other people out. It's the best thing I could have ever done. I didn't ask for anything in return either. I think is the other lesson to take away is, you know, just being a good human being and not asking for things in return goes a long way, especially when you're doing it in a bipartisan manner. So.
I think that hits the nail on the head right there in politics. I think that sums it up pretty well. And as someone who has seen, you've seen the inner workings of both the political and the legal fields, how do you see the role of law and politics changing in the next couple of years in our country, or do you see it changing at all?
So, yeah, I mean, that's a good question. The thing that I learned is that you can have good intentions for law and a really, really great vision for it, and a judge can just rip that out and do whatever they want with it. Judges have so much power in this country. It's actually unfathomable to me. I didn't realize, I guess it kind of throughout my political career, if you will, I kind of was like, oh my gosh, the president has a lot of power. And then I kind of like learned more and I was like, okay, well, president so much. It's more like, you know, the Congress. And then I was like, well, the state house actually has more power than Congress because it's more local, more impactful. And then I went, oh, well, actually, no, it's the cities because the cities, you know, do that. And then now that I'm in the state house, I'm like, man, it's not even the cities, it's the judges. Because a judge can look at a law and you can get 15 different judges in front of the same law that says the exact same thing. And all 15 of them can come up with some different interpretation. So, you know, where I see it going, I mean, just to be frank, I wish that things weren't so divided. But the reality is that as long as we keep getting in this hyper-partisan world that we live in, I only see things really just getting more and more partisan, unless there's some grand awakening, which I don't think is going to happen. But the reality is that, you know, once a judge does something in Texas, the only way that we can undo what that judge does is address it in the legislature a year and a half later. Even then, you know, that's only if the legislature chooses to address it. So, you know, I have a little bit more of a pessimistic view, but, you know, it's interesting to see the inner workings of both, because there's a lot of legislation too, where it's almost like they're set up for court cases. Mm-hmm. I guess as an example of this, just real quick, there's actually a statute in Texas where if Roe v. Wade is heard in the Supreme Court, and it's ruled a certain way, that abortion automatically gets outlawed in Texas. And it's something that a lot of people don't know about. It's something that a lot of people probably have never even thought about. But there's things like that where judges can rule or basically legislate from the bench. And they'll typically say it's judicial activism and things like that. But judges are some of the most powerful people in the country. And so really, unfortunately, we're at their whim and their discretion.
Right. And on that same note, with how much power judges have and when they make a ruling, it obviously makes such big consequences into our daily lives. So how important do you think it is to understand those, not even legal implications, but just general implications and consequences when working in politics or working in the legal field?
I mean, so this kind of goes back to what I was mentioning earlier about, you know, making your connections and networking. You know, I will tell you that, you know, the representative that I work for is a Black pastor. And some of the people that we closely work with are people are white representatives from rural Texas, you know, and it's on the surface level, you'd never think that they would work together, you know, completely polar mm-hmm. opposite everything. But some of our biggest advocates have been people that are polar opposites from us. And it's the same way in whether it be the legal profession, the political profession, or whatever profession you're in, relationship building is the most important thing to do. And when I say that, I don't mean just, you know, shaking hands and calling favors when needed. I mean, like, actually building deep roots with people and including them in things and making sure that you see eye to eye with them. And that doesn't mean you have to sacrifice your personal morals or your values either. I want to make that very clear. We worked with, so my boss, Representative Sherman, worked, we had a lot of discussions with Representative Schaefer, who, if you're not familiar, he represents Tyler, Texas. And he's a very, very conservative member. He's a member of the Freedom Caucus, and was most notable for right after the El Paso shooting, saying that he would absolutely oppose any gun regulations, and he would make sure that that was his driving point home. And so the thing about him, though, and the thing that I appreciate about Representative Schaefer, is that he is genuine and he is true. So if he tells you something, he means it. Some people I've learned in the political field, they will tell you something and they don't mean it, and they will lie to your face, and they will try to advance their personal. And, you know, that might work short term. Like, maybe you'll get something done in the next year or two, but long term, it does not work. I can't tell you how many times during session I would hear somebody say something, and they would get something passed, or they would move a bill forward, and then 3 months later, the bill would die because, you know, they upset somebody that they didn't realize was going to be connected to the bill. So, you know, I've never really been the kind of person to ever get upset or angry or even talk negatively about somebody. I found that if you stay quiet and somebody's saying something negative, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're complicit. It just means that you're using your energy, you're using your power in an appropriate way. You have to pick your fights, basically. You know, if you know that your bill is going to go through so-and-so's committee and you hear them saying something dumb, it's better to hold your tongue and let the bill pass. And then after the fact, address it if you really think it's that important, which kind of sucks. But, you know, it's the reality of being in the minority party in Texas.
Yeah, I think that give and take and that compromise that you mentioned beforehand goes right into this discussion as well. And I know we've also mentioned your job as a campaign manager. So that position, in that political position, you were having to take on such a huge responsibility while also completing your undergrad. That seems like a lot. So what was that experience like for you?
It's stressful. I'm just going to say that it's stressful. But the main thing, I think people look at that and they go, you know, how can you do all that? And it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about personal sacrifice. You know, for me, it's very worth it to basically spend, you know, sometimes the 60 hours a week doing that stuff. Did my grades suffer from it? Absolutely. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, it's a decision that I made, and it's not one that I would regret. But, you know, I think that's kind of the thing. You know, working in politics, there's not really a good compromise. Something is going to end up being sacrificed. And that's really what the nature of politics is a personal sacrifice. You know, whether it be your staffer or representative, you have to sacrifice something. You know, for a lot of the representatives, it's they have to sacrifice time at home. They have to sacrifice time with their family. They have to sacrifice all of this other stuff. For me, it was I had to sacrifice some of my personal time that I would spend with friends or, you know, time that I would spend studying, you know, things like that, where I had to have fantastic time management skills, because I knew that, you know, if I was needing to get X, Y, and Z done, I had to make sure that all my reading was done and all of that. And, you know, I'm personally of the opinion to work smarter, not harder. So if, you know, my professor would assign 50 pages versus if I could, you know, maybe Google it and get, you know, like Spark Notes or something like that. Sometimes that's just what I did. And, you know, when it came to testing and stuff like that, it was just more of a, let's find what Quizlets we can online. And I'm not going to spend my time, you know, doing all that because I can't. Like the reality is that if you work in politics, whether it be for a representative or at the campaign level, you're not going to be able to continue studying like it's a full-time job. You just can't. And if you try to, you're going to burn yourself out and then everything falls apart. You know, that's the one thing I will say I'm very thankful for, that I've never personally been burned out and that I've managed to keep everything pretty in line and tame and mellow. So, you know, I would just say keep those things in mind, that politics is a game of personal sacrifice and you will sacrifice something. Mm-hmm. And you can't get around it. It's just the reality. So
work smarter, not harder.
Exactly. That saved my life so many times. I can't tell you, even in law school. I won't get into too many specifics because I currently am in law school, but you know, I don't want the deans to hear me say anything, but you know,
we'll stick to the undergrad. We moved.
Exactly. I will just tell you, Google is your friend. Google is going to save your life if you really need the help, because I promise you somebody else has done it already.
There we go. Now for that kind of leads into our last question, but something I like to ask all of our speakers that come on, if you could go back in time, give yourself one piece of advice as a pre-law student in undergrad, what would it be?
You know, I'm not sure what advice I guess I would give myself, other than maybe save more money, because it
gets expensive. That's good advice.
it gets expensive really quickly. I don't know. I, in all seriousness, it probably would be try to better my discipline. You know, even tonight, I have class tonight and I haven't done my readings, you know, but it's, I should have done them already, you know, but that's a habit where I know at the time, you know, it's kind of like in high school where you think, oh my God, this is the end of the world. If like you don't do well on a test or you don't study properly, things like mm-hmm. that. being in law school, looking back at undergrad, it's the same way. Like, I wish I was in undergrad again with how easy everything was. Cause like once you get into law school, one of the classes I'm taking, we have two assignments and they're both tests. That's it. You don't get redos, you know? So it's like, if you're not reading, you know, no one's going to hold your hand and say, come on, you need to read. Right. You know, I wish I had better study habits and better time management when it came to that. But again, that's something I probably sacrificed doing all of my.
You did a lot of other things too at the same time as undergrad.
Right. So. Exactly. Yeah. But that's probably the piece of advice I would give.
Discipline and save money. I think save money is a good tip too.
it comes in handy when you have to buy supplementals and stuff for law school. And then you realize that, you know, that not a lot of people buy them. So it drives the price up of everything.
Well, with that, that wraps up our episode with Gavin. I want to thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to talk to us about your undergrad career, law school, and working at the Texas House of Representatives. We really do appreciate you coming on tonight. As always, this is Under Oath, and I rest my case.
Thank you so much for tuning in to our bi-weekly episodes. This is Maisha Scheif, and I'm the production chair for Women Pursuing Law. This episode was hosted by Kavya Menakopalan, edited by Fatima Azim, and written by Tiffany B. If you liked this episode, it would be great if you left us a short review. And also, please make sure to follow us on Instagram at UTDWPL and LinkedIn at UTD Women Pursuing Law. Goodbye and stay safe.